to do it instead of going through it. It's not going to happen.
Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Ruth Edelstein interviewing David Koss, December 20th, 1984. Mr. Koss, let's pick up where we left off at the last interview. You were talking about education, your role as a teacher in Jewish education in Pittsburgh. Let's start there and tell us, first of all, how education was when you first started and what changes you have seen at the Hebrew Institute and also in Pittsburgh, and how you evaluate the Jewish education here.
Oh, I can say that I can give you only my personal opinion, and some other people might not agree with me. Jewish education, I would say, since after World War II, has changed a lot. Basically, the afternoon Hebrew school was in its nature more of a religious school, and emphasis was placed usually on Judaic studies. Mm-hmm. And by that I would define it would be the prayer book. And when I say the prayer book, I do not mean just by learning to read it, to know about the prayer book as much as it is possible to transmit to elementary school children, as much as possible. Emphasis was placed on teaching Chumash, and with the older ones, also the prophets. And in most cases, teach it from original.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from original.
And that would be in Hebrew?
In Hebrew. And from the original book, not from any abbreviated Chumashim or abbreviated prophet books, mm-hmm. but the original, the way the Torah is, actually. Hebrew was taught more in a classical way. We had books which had stories. We would give the students the vocabulary like on a blackboard, and they would learn it a little bit. They would learn to make a sentence, and we would study the story. After studying the story perhaps several times, we would place some questions in Hebrew referring to that story. Some of that could be answered with yes or no, Cain or lo. Some of it required a few words, and they would learn to do that. But in no way was it geared to conversational Hebrew. But in spite of it, they could read in time a boy or a girl who continued, let's say, for 5-6 years or maybe a little longer. They were able to get a hold of a Hebrew book and read it and understand a good part of it. In other words, it was a classical way of knowing it, but they could answer certain questions, but they couldn't speak it. It's almost like Latin. You couldn't speak in Latin. I studied Latin in high school. So you can read the assignment and know what it is, but you could not make a conversation in it. So the same thing was almost the Hebrew. But most of the time was given to the Judaic studies. Mm-hmm. And the Hebrew part was actually, if there was a stepchild in the educational process, the language was the stepchild that it received last time. Now, that went on all over the country, practically. A Hebrew school was never a Berlitz school to come in and learn the Hebrew language. You could learn it in Berlitz, but you actually could not acquire it unless you continued for many years in a yeshiva, and they didn't learn how to converse. Or even at the theological seminary, let's say. The teacher seminary I went to was in Hebrew, but it was even hard to over there to learn conversation. You don't have the fluency. I had fluency at one time in conversation in the formative years. When I started to go to school at the age of 6, I went to a private Jewish school, which was, everything was taught in Hebrew. So by the time I was 10, 12, I could make a conversation, whatever vocabulary they taught us. But then after, when I acquired higher education, only at a teacher's college, I had improved my Hebrew. But at the Lehrenstalt for the Wissens of the Judentum, I did not improve my Hebrew, because there was no language at all. We studied Talmud, or we studied the Mishnah, or the Pirik, or whatever. We conversed and we sat together and we spoke in German, rather, you understand? Yeah. So the vernacular. Now, how did the school change here? By the time, that's the way I handled it in, let's say, in Newcastle. I was the principal and I was the teacher. You know, we used to get once in a while help for beginners, and everything was done between the rabbi and myself. And he would be the teacher and I was the rabbi too. You know, it was like a partnership in doing things. When I came here at the Hebrew Institute, let's say about 20 years ago, the Judaic part was upheld about the way we did it. More emphasis was given to language at the Hebrew Institute than any other synagogue Hebrew school. Language was an important part. Now, how was that accomplished? That kids were going 4 days a week to Hebrew school, including Sundays. So that made it 5 times a week. Now, Sundays, if Hebrew language was not taught, there were certain subjects which we would have to handle during the week could be handled on Sunday. Like, for instance, customs and ceremonies, holidays. That could be postponed for Sunday because it had to be taught in English anyway. You know, they should know what it's all about. So time was given. Now, when I started myself, I taught Chumash to the older kids. Right out of the Chumash, no abbreviated storybook about Bible tales. Mm-hmm. And I taught the prophets, Joshua, Samuel, or whatever, selections from here and there, because if we would want to go through a book, we couldn't do it in a year even, you know. So, and language was also given a lot of emphasis. But that don't mean that they would still learn to speak Hebrew. But they would understand a lot more, I would say, as if they were going to any other school, because more emphasis was given. The classical Hebrew was there too, because the textbooks were geared that way. Mm-hmm. The textbooks had Bible stories. Maybe they weren't realistic. It might have been better if they would have stories about baseball and football and so on. It would be more modernistic, perhaps, for vernacular talk. But they were also geared to a vocabulary which was also antiquated. A change came completely with the establishment of the State of Israel. All over the country, and that applies to Pittsburgh, and it applied to the Hebrew Institute also. And my experience is mostly with the Hebrew Institute. From others, I can hear about it, what's mm-hmm. going on, but I know exactly what goes on in this place. In time, you know, in order to be successful in any schooling, especially in supplementary schooling, there has to be a partnership between the management of the school and the faculty, the teaching staff, and the parents and the students. There are four components, there are four partners. In order to have it successful and have a success in it. Now, I would say that I'll evaluate the parents. The parents, at that particular time, at the very beginning when I came here, we had tremendously interested parents. there was a Fatos Club and there was a ladies' auxiliary, you know. They would come there, they would do a lot of things for the children. And all holidays, you know, any little excuse was a party, and there was a holiday. The parents did a lot. The parents were interested that the children should go to school. If you called up a parent and had some problem with a child, most parents would listen. Even if they would not admit, and they would tell you, if there's anything we can do about it, we are going to help you, you know. If it's usually a behavioral problem, you know, or absenteeism, not coming, and not telling even the parents, kill an hour or two somewhere and go home and so on. Kids of that type. So we had a good percentage of very interested parents. When I started with Baron Bat Mitzvah, after Mr. Spector retired, and it was part-time. It was 2 days a week for this and a two-day-a-week class. The only classes that were 2 days a week were only girls. There were no two-day-a-week classes for boys. So for a number of years, I never had any boys. I only had girls. In that respect, it was easier for me, I think. At least the other teachers said girls are better students and they behave themselves better, which is true. Mm-hmm. They do behave themselves better, and by better behavior they can become better students. So I used to have girls, and I used to teach language when they started Be'yad HaLashon and this. Now little by little, the Hebrew Institute began to change after 4 days a week were untenable anymore, that the parents have changed, and they began to pressure at meetings, pressure for more time off, not 4 days, that it should be classes for 3 days for boys and two remained for girls. I remember there was one meeting and some of the teachers were asked to come to that board meeting and they had a problem there. And the teachers asked me to go, you know, that I should go to the board meeting. And what was the problem? They wanted to know, and they thought maybe they can get an answer from a teacher rather than from administration, you know. Mrs. Sussman, she is dead now. Milton Sussman's wife was on the board. And she says, I would like to know why there are special classes for girls, like there would be segregation. And I don't know how it came to the thing. Dr. Abram says, let Mr. Castle tell you. He can tell you even better than I can, he says, why it works that way. And I told her the truth, you know, there's nothing but the truth. I said, we don't have segregation, we don't make up classes for girls and classes for boys. As a matter of fact, we have in the 3-day-a-week classes a lot of girls. In those days we had a lot of students, at least 400 students. Each class had 28, 30 students and double classes. Mm-hmm. I said, the 2-day-a-week classes were set up for girls by the administration years ago because the parents did not want the girls to go 4 times a week. Parents did not believe that girls need the same education that boys do. Mm-hmm. So this is carried over. And that's the only reason I see why we have girls' classes, where there is no boy in it, because we don't permit a boy in there, not because he is a boy. The bylaws, the rules of the school requires that a boy goes 4 days and then it went down to 3 days. But a girl has that choice. I said, we have a lot of girls among the boys' classes. For those girls who want to come 3 days a week, we have only 2 days for those who do not want to come 3 days. Now, the curriculum began to change. And I think it was under the influence of Israel. All of a sudden, the spoken word became the most important thing. You have to know how to speak Hebrew. And how do you accomplish it? We have already 1 day lost. We have only 3 days a week Hebrew school. And the only way to give more time to language, now modern textbooks came out, like Biyad HaLashon, and there were others too, you know, that wasn't the only method.
Biyad HaLashon is a textbook in beginning Hebrew.
In beginning Hebrew, but for conversational Hebrew. Now you can learn all that Hebrew, and be, let's say, and be able to speak, and you know nothing about Judaism.
Yes.
Now, in my estimation, you don't become a Jew by knowing how to speak Hebrew. There are Gentile people who speak Hebrew, and there are Jews who speak a lot of languages. Now, if you, for instance, would learn to speak French well, then you wouldn't become a Frenchman, you know. Or if I would be able to speak Swahili, I wouldn't become an African. I'd know the language. And you could apply the same thing to Hebrew. A Jewish child that will learn to speak Hebrew and knows nothing about the rest, among ourselves, he's not much of a Jew, you know, because he is ignorant of Jewish tradition and everything. So more time was given. I taught Biyad HaLashon. Sally Rosen, what is his name? Rosenthal? She was a terrific, you know, you have the Rosenzweig, I mean.
Oh, Rosenzweig. Yes, yes.
She was a terrific student. She's really a terrific girl. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the book.
Yes.
You're familiar with it. You know, there are a lot of dialogues, and how did we teach? The method of teaching is to drill it in, you know. First, a student and the teacher, and two students together, and you learn a little the vocabulary, and after that, you stick to Hebrew, to speak Hebrew. And if you keep on the same dialogue for a week or for 2 weeks, you know, unless we knew one dialogue, we didn't move to the second one. And the only way to accomplish it, they began to neglect everything else. Prayer, the way the Hebrew Institute actually taught prayer in a very good way, you know, the way actually I used to do it myself before. I never took up a prayer with the students unless I explained them about the prayer. The source, where it is taken from, if it is biblical or a composition, and what type of a prayer it is. You know, there are prayers that are prayers of request, we ask something for ourselves, favors from God, or for the community, or let's say, for a sick person, or whatever there is. To explain to them that they should know, take up a little bit of vocabulary, kill a little time on that prayer, so by the time you're through with it, they'll know what it's all about. You don't have to know the whole Siddur, because quality is more important than quantity.
Yes.
So let them know a little. If you'll know a little, and the student is interested, in later years they can go on, continue and study it. So it's more important to plant a seed, that and arouse the curiosity of a student. You can't learn anything in school, nor can a college student learn everything in college. College can only give him a key to unlock books, unlock material, you know, that you can go and find out yourself, but you're not going to learn it all in the classroom. The classroom can give you ideas and can push you in the right direction. But just by listening to professors, you're not going to become an educated person. You're not going to know the material unless you do it yourself. So in that respect, the more and more time it was given to language, less time was given to other subjects. So in that respect, like teaching Chumash from the original disappeared in time, and it is relegated to booklets, you know, in very abbreviated, rather childlike fashion, you know. And prophets is not taught at all. It had to go by the way we used to teach Perek, the sayings of the fathers. That went by the way in time, and everything gave way to language. The two-day-a-week classes were done away with, you know, under pressure. I think both this month's pressure for that. There shouldn't be any segregated classes. So all classes became 3 days a week. that wouldn't be so bad. But I would say at least in a decade, and in less than that, the parents change, and the parents change the school. Parents give the children too much freedom in that respect as far as a Jewish education is concerned. When a kid comes home and says, well, mother or father, I want one day off from Hebrew school, I have too much homework to do, the parents will say yes. So instead of coming 3 days a week, many are only coming 2 days a week. This one takes off. I am the only one who finds it out first. You know, I go around looking for some kids about when they're going to be bar mitzvah or so on. I come into the classroom and I ask the teacher, oh, this one, Jack, he don't come on Mondays. He only comes Tuesday and Thursday. I go in a Tuesday class, you know. All of them have to be Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Since a couple years ago, they did away with Wednesday completely. So it became less and less and less. Oh, this one, he don't come on Tuesday, he only comes Thursday and Monday, yes. You know. So pretty soon I found out, especially the bigger ones, very few of them come 3 days a week. And the parents agree with that. The parents permit that. Now, how much can they really learn in 2 afternoons? They can learn very little. So the parents help curtail the curriculum.
Yes. Mr. Koss, what do you teach now at the Hebrew
Right now, I usually combine a class for prayer, but my main work is actually I prepare the Bar and Bat Mitzvah kids, and I once a month I have an assembly for the whole school. Once a month. And we connected, you know, usually with Rosh Chodesh. So I introduced to them like a Mark Shabbat service and some other pertaining Rosh Chodesh. If there's another holiday preceding, you know, we might take in something from that. And it is usually combined with something else, with singing or... So once a month we manage to have at least one assembly that way. Yes. Now one thing I like to tell you, how parents have changed. Yes. We used to call, Dr. Abrams used to call for a meeting from parents whose children would be, let's say, bar mitzvah within half a year or 8 months. And we used to get practically every parent requested. Sometimes both parents would come. We would have about 100 people to a meeting, and we would try rather explain to them what bat mitzvah is all about. You know, the parents should know. It's really not a must, you know, as far as Judaism is concerned. We would have a terrific response, and it began, you know, to shrink from year to year. Now if we call for a meeting, nobody comes. The parents are not interested. You understand? So we are dealing with parents who are completely disinterested. If you would ask them why they are sending the children, especially the young parents, they really don't know. Either it is style or it is socially acceptable that you have to or so on. But the real meaning why, a lot of sending them to be bar and bat mitzvah, that's definitely true. Because in spite that they are not observant and know very little themselves, this they believe somehow is a must.
Yes. Does the bar and bat mitzvah take place at the Hebrew Institute, or are these
Not necessarily. Most of them do take place at the Hebrew Institute for one simple reason, that I would say that 90% of our students are unaffiliated parents. So it takes place.
They're not affiliated with other
synagogue. I mean. Yeah. So they take place with us. We have quite a number of children that go to Rodef Shalom Sabbath School. And we get some of their students to be prepared by us because they don't want the preparation there. They want by us. So when I prepare them, the service is held at Rodef Shalom. The service is set there. But the students, I had several years ago, about 5-6 of them during the summer months for Rodef Shalom. Of course, you have to prepare them their style. and their style is no Haftarah. The students learn to read. They don't want to chant neither. Most of my students chanted. A portion from the Torah. In Rode of Sholem is
my
not,
son chanted at Rode of
Sholem. Officially, there is no chanting, but they will permit you if they don't prepare him for chanting. When was he prepared?
At Rode of Sholem. Did you teach Stephen Leibowitz?
What?
Stephen Leibowitz. Did you teach Stephen
Leibowitz? Dr. Abrams said that Stephen Leibowitz.
That was the same year.
I had the same summer a few more. I don't remember their names. The last one I had was a year ago, and that was Peter.
I might have changed.
What's the name? I was talking one time with Mr. Cavalier, you know, when I had a student there, and he told me that he personally did like they should chant. He would like him to chant, but that's not the policy down there.
I think they
it's rather the exception.
Yeah, they give them a choice. Yeah, it is
and
true. Some
you see, they make a selection from the Seder of the week, not necessarily the Maftir, any selection, and that they want him to study, you know, and they require the Torah blessings only, but they want him to memorize the Torah blessings. Memorize it. You shouldn't have to read it.
So they don't read it.
From the book. They memorize
yes.
that. And then that portion, and that will be by ability, I guess. If it's a better student, they'll give him a bigger portion, maybe 8-10 lines. If it is a weaker child, you know, in that respect, I mean, they'll assign him a smaller portion. But I have had countless students from Rode of Sholem. Some of the kids are Bar Mitzvah at New Light.
Mm-hmm.
I have had last summer 3 or 4 in Adat Yeshurun.
Mm-hmm.
The synagogues who have a school of their own do not accept outside preparation. If they want to be Bar Mitzvah, let's say at Beit Sholem or in Bnei Israel or Tree of Life, they would have to be their students and go there. At that one time, they wouldn't accept only a member, but I think, you know, since business is meager for them too, they will accept a student. They charge them a lot of money for it too.
Mm-hmm.
They will accept them, but would have to go right there.
Mm-hmm. Because Mr. Koss, how do you see Jewish education in Pittsburgh comparing it to the Hebrew Institute? What changes have you seen outside of the Hebrew Institute?
The same changes that took place by us took place in all the synagogues because they all have the same type of parents.
Mm-hmm.
Most of Hebrew school today know, I don't know officially, but I would wager I am right if I say that even Beit Sholem and Tree of Life in Israel don't have much of a school at all because they don't have any young people down there. They are all mostly moved out to the eastern suburbs, to the southern. They have an aged population and they have very few children. Many of the Orthodox synagogues who had schools within the less than years or so closed them up. Adat Yeshurun closed up their Hebrew school, and they recommend their parents to send the children to the Hebrew Institute, which we do get them. Paul at Tzedek at one time.
You have about 3 minutes.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Paul at Tzedek closed up the Hebrew school. Sharat Torah don't have much of a Hebrew school. They have a dozen or half a dozen kids, I would say.
Fewer young children these
there
years.
There are a lot of
the
fewer children.
Is
now, another element came in, and that goes also for the United States as well. There's more day schools now. At one time, there were only yeshivas, you know, under the auspices of Orthodoxy. Like the Hillel was the only one to the yeshiva. Now the yeshiva you don't draw on the general population, they really draw mostly on their own clan and their own Hasidim. But with the busing of forced integration, it gave a shot, let's say, to the Hillel. Then came the community day school for parents who did not want them to get that type of education to be so indoctrinated like Hillel would do.
Because Hillel is Orthodox.
Orthodox, and they indoctrinate them.
Although we had neighbors whose children went to Hillel, and they told me that although they were observant Jews, most of the children in their classes were not as observant as they are.
That's true now. You see, I don't know if it's true exactly now, but...
Okay, I'm going to stop.